percentage of GDP, we spend less than half as much as the Chinese Communist Party on basic research.
U.S. lawmakers unite against Chinese technology. It's Thursday, the 10th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Australia looks to free a Sydney academic from a Myanmar jail. Malaysia is angry with China. We'll tell you why. The U.S. president embarks on his first trip abroad since being in office. Taliban insurgents kill at least 10 Afghans working for an agency clearing landmines there. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. Senate overwhelmingly approved a bill Tuesday that aims to boost U.S. semiconductor production and the development of artificial intelligence, along with other technology, in the face of growing international competition, most notably from China. The 68-32 vote for the bill demonstrates how confronting China economically is an issue that unites both parties in the U.S. Congress. That is a rarity in an era of division. The bill's overall cost would increase spending by about $250 billion, with most of the spending occurring in the first 5 years. Supporters described it as the biggest investment in scientific research that the country has seen in decades. It comes as the nation's share of semiconductor manufacturing globally has steadily eroded from 37% in 1990 to about 12% now, and as a chip shortage has exposed vulnerabilities in the U.S. supply chain. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the time to act is now.
As a percentage of GDP, we spend less than half as much as the Chinese Communist Party on basic research. We rely on foreign nations to supply critical technologies that we invented, like semiconductors. That sunny American optimism has flickered as well. The world is more competitive now than at any time since the end of the Second World War. If we do nothing, our days as the dominant superpower may be ending. We don't mean to let those days end on our watch. We don't mean to see America becoming a middling nation in this century. We mean for America to lead it. Passing this bill, now called the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, is the moment when the Senate lays the foundation for another century of American leadership. Let me say that again. This bill could be the turning point for American leadership in the 21st century. And for that reason, this legislation will go down as one of the most significant bipartisan achievements of the U.S. Senate in recent history.
It is unclear whether the measure will find support in the Democratic-led House, where the Science Committee is expected to soon consider that chamber's version of the measure. Wang Wenbin, a spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry, firmly rejected the bill in Beijing, which he alleged smears China's development path in both domestic and foreign policies and seriously interferes in the country's internal affairs. You can find out more about this by checking our webpage at voanews.com, along with our many other digital platforms. Here are some of the stories at voanews.com. Mongolians took to the polls Wednesday to choose among the country's presidential candidates, one of whom recently tested positive for COVID-19. UN agencies commend Indonesia's rescue of Rohingya refugees at sea. UN warns of massive loss of life in eastern Myanmar. Japan's prime minister laments on Wednesday, drawing so much criticism for Japan's hosting of the Olympics with the COVID-19 crisis unabated. The U.S. not seeking Pakistani bases, Pakistani officials tell VOA, nor is it possible. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Australia is facing renewed calls to introduce fresh sanctions on the military government in Myanmar to help free a Sydney academic. Sean Turnell, an economic advisor to the Southeast Asian nation's ousted de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, remains in prison after being arrested earlier this year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Colleagues and associates regard Australian academic Sean Turnell as a devoted friend to the people of Myanmar. He grew up in Macquarie Fields, a working-class suburb of Sydney. His first job was at the Reserve Bank of Australia at age 19. He said his great passion was money and banking. He later became an academic at Macquarie University, specialising in research on the Myanmar economy. He's a professor of economics and the highly regarded author of Fiery Dragons, a history of the financial sector in Myanmar. He's also advised the United States Congress on the Southeast Asian nation. Turnell has been an advisor to various international agencies. His expertise and dedication caught the attention of Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader of Myanmar's National League for Democracy Party. Turnell has been a long-serving economic aide to Suu Kyi. Both were arrested following February's military takeover in Myanmar. They've reportedly been charged with breaking the country's official secrets law. Earlier this year, hundreds of academics signed a petition demanding his release, describing Turnell as the nicest human you will ever meet. His wife, Ha Vu, is also an academic at Macquarie University. She said she was distraught about his detention. His family said he'd fallen in love with Myanmar. The military crackdown against the pro-democracy movement is reported to have killed more than 800 people. Several thousand people have been arrested. Australia has been criticised for not doing enough to secure Turnell's release. The Australian Council for International Development, an umbrella organisation for international aid agencies, has said that while the United States, Britain, Canada and the European Union have imposed sanctions on senior Myanmar military officials since February, Canberra has not. Tim Harcourt, a friend of Turnell's and an economist at the University of Technology, Sydney, believes Turnell is being treated well in prison.
I understand that Sean's been able to talk to his wife and he's reasonably healthy and getting on well with all the guards and things, but obviously the legal situation's not real good.
There's been no comment from Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne. She has previously called for Turnell's release, describing him as a highly regarded member of the academic community in Australia. Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, was controlled by a repressive military government from 1962 to 2011. A government effectively led by Suu Kyi came to power after elections in 2015. Myanmar has a population of about 57 million people. It borders the Andaman Sea and the Bay of Bengal between Thailand and Bangladesh. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, China's banking and insurance watchdog issued rules Wednesday requiring sizable banks and insurers to prepare recovery plans in the unlikely event that they run into financial trouble. Make sure you stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for spending some of your day with us here on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Analysts say a rare burst of anger from Malaysia over the flight of Chinese Air Force planes near its airspace and a Coast Guard vessel spotted in a disputed waterway indicates Beijing has crossed the line with Kuala Lumpur in its slow maritime expansion. Malaysia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said in a June 1st statement it would summon the Chinese ambassador over 16 People's Liberation Army Air Force planes that flew over a Malaysian maritime zone. Malaysia's Air Force scrambled its own jets to push China's planes out. Days later, a Malaysian Maritime Enforcement Agency official said a Chinese Coast Guard ship had been seen 156 kilometers from shore, according to the Borneo Post domestic news website. Malaysia normally keeps quiet or protests out of public view when the militarily stronger China passes ships into waters Kuala Lumpur sees as its own. Aircraft sightings are less common. Oh Ai Sun is a senior fellow with the Singapore Institute of International Affairs.
This is the Chinese simultaneously signaling their unhappiness to Malaysia and also flexing muscle to the U.S.
China has been Malaysia's top trading partner for the past 12 years and a source of investment in domestic infrastructure. But Malaysia officials have long simmered privately as Chinese Coast Guard ships frequent waters in their exclusive economic zone north of Borneo, according to Alexander Bubing, a professor at the Daniel K. Inouye Asia-China Center for Security Studies in Hawaii.
Those Chinese ships are always there. They come and go, but they have a permanent presence now at Laconia Shoals. Obviously, this is an irritating in the relationship. It is not appreciated by the Malaysian government.
Analysts say Malaysia can't do much against China militarily because Chinese forces are stronger. Sharaman Lachman, senior foreign policy and security studies analyst with the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Malaysia, is one of them.
I think it's just another slice in the salami. China's end goal in the South China Sea is to control the water in the skies. So every day they advance a little.
The U.S. has no claim in the South China Sea, but counts Malaysia, the Philippines, and Taiwan as allies. The United States did pass Navy ships through the sea 10 times in 2019 and another 10 times last year. Our thanks to VOA correspondent Ralph Jennings for this story. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's king started a series of meetings with leaders of political parties Wednesday amid public discontent over the government's handling of a coronavirus crisis that has forced the nation into a third lockdown. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. President Joe Biden headed to the United Kingdom and Europe on his first trip abroad Wednesday, sending a signal that his administration values close transatlantic relationships as it deals with challenges like emerging from the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, and threats from China and Russia. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
On Monday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visited the White House, where he said President Joe Biden will be welcomed in Europe with open arms.
No other major power has so many friends and allies as the United States has in NATO. So I look forward to welcoming President Biden to Brussels.
The White House says Biden wants to work closely with America's democratic allies in the United Kingdom and Europe to face challenges such as threats and unfair competition from Russia and China. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
At the US-EU summit, the President and European Union leaders will focus on aligning our approaches to trade and technology so that democracies, and not anyone else, not China or other autocracies, are writing the rules for trade and technology for the 21st century.
But foreign policy expert Brian Katulis says that regarding China, America's interest may not align with those of its European allies.
Countries looking at the rise of China and its growth in the economy, looking at its technology and what it has to offer, and looking for ways to maintain ties with the United States, but also build ties with China. So countries like Germany, I think, will continue to hedge in a certain extent, not see eye to eye entirely with the United States.
Katulis says Biden will seek to highlight the common values that the United States and Europe share and that Russia and China do not.
This is his first trip as U.S. president. And I think going to the other center of sort of global democracies, Europe, is an important feature of this. And the multilateral meetings are important. But then some of the key bilateral meetings to watch, I think, would be the ones with UK Prime Minister, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, as well as the Turkish leader Erdogan.
Biden's first talks will be with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, host of the G7 summit. Then he heads to Brussels for EU and NATO summits, leading up to talks next week in Geneva with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He has promised to pressure both China and Russia on human rights abuses. Mark Simakovsky is with the Atlantic Council.
So Biden and the administration want to showcase that America is back and that we can build back together to counter some of the most significant challenges that we face globally, like climate change, like COVID response, like dealing with great power competition with Russia and China. So this administration, I think, knows it needs allies.
Simakovsky and other experts say the U.S. is now entering a new phase on COVID-19, where it is turning its attention to helping the rest of the world come out of the deadly pandemic by sharing life-saving vaccines. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Japan and Australia voiced serious concerns Wednesday over reports of human rights abuses against Uyghur and other Muslim minorities in China's far western region of Xinjiang. But Beijing dismissed the remarks as a malicious smear. Make sure you stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. Environmentalists for decades have had mixed feelings about nuclear power. Now, U.S. President Joe Biden's administration has decided to cautiously embrace the energy resource despite lingering safety concerns to help achieve its goal of a net zero carbon economy for America by the year 2050. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports from the North Anna Power Station in Mineral, Virginia.
This nuclear power plant, with a pair of decades-old pressurized water reactors, produces about 20% of the state of Virginia's electricity. The nearly 100 nuclear reactors across the United States will be absolutely essential for the country to meet the goals President Joe Biden has set for greenhouse gas emissions, according to his climate advisor, Gina McCarthy.
Now, I don't expect those old ones to be around a long time, but I do expect them to be safe, and I expect them to continue in a way that's going to allow us to keep the greenhouse gas emissions down with really stable baseload capacity.
Aside from reliability, nuclear power production is relatively compact. The equivalent of a 1 gigawatt reactor would require numerous solar panels or wind turbines, blanketing an area several hundred times bigger than what is needed for a typical nuclear power plant. Dan Stoddard is Dominion Energy's chief nuclear officer.
There's not a sufficient recognition of nuclear as being carbon free. So I think that's in part on us as an industry to better communicate that fact. We have a great story to tell in nuclear.
For decades, environmental groups warned about the risks of nuclear power, pointing to accidents at Three Mile Island in the United States, Chernobyl in Ukraine, and Fukushima in Japan. They also raised concerns about where and how to safely store radioactive waste for the long term. Greenpeace, once on the forefront of this, no longer actively campaigns against nuclear power in the United States. The group declined VOA's request for an on-camera interview on the topic, but it did send a statement arguing nuclear energy is both expensive and dangerous, and just because nuclear pollution is invisible doesn't mean it's clean. The group suggests that instead of pouring money into new nukes, the Biden administration should focus on phasing out fossil fuels and investing in the transition to a renewable energy economy. The nuclear industry calls that outdated thinking.
These plants approaching 50 years of operation, have never operated more safely or more reliably in their history. The United States nuclear industry has an incredible track record of safe and reliable operation.
Nuclear plants like this one remain the country's top source of emissions-free power generation. But they weren't designed to last forever, and very few new ones are being built in the United States. Decommissioning too many of them could send Biden's clean energy goals up in smoke. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the North Anna Power Station in Mineral, Virginia.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Former President Donald Trump's executive order that attempted to ban Chinese video app TikTok has been replaced by the Biden administration, which has implemented its own executive orders to review several Chinese apps for possible national security and privacy risks. President Biden's executive order directs the Commerce Department to analyze TikTok, WeChat, and other Chinese apps to see if they collect personal data or if they're connected to the Chinese military. Trump's efforts to ban TikTok in the summer of 2020 were blocked by the courts, and the issue was soon overshadowed by the 2020 presidential election. Taliban insurgents shot dead at least 10 Afghans working for an agency clearing landmines in an attack on their camp in the north of the country, according to Interior Ministry spokesperson Tariq Aryan. Emily Wither has more.
A mine workers' camp in northern Afghanistan was attacked in the night. The Halo Trust said in a statement that an unknown armed group killed at least 10 of its Afghan staff. More than a dozen people were wounded. The agency said there were 110 workers at the camp, and an official said that most of the survivors fled to nearby villages. The Interior Ministry said the gunmen were Taliban insurgents, though the group denied involvement. After decades of conflict, Afghanistan is strewn with mines and unexploded ordnance. Agencies have been working to clear them in the years since the Taliban were ousted in 2001. The Taliban frequently attack demining workers because government officials say the workers often help to defuse roadside bombs that insurgents have planted.
That was Reuters correspondent Emily Wither. When Olympics organizers shifted the marathon event from Tokyo to the northern city of Sapporo, they did so because of concerns about the intense summer heat in the Japanese capital. But 2 years down the track, critics say planners have effectively leapt from the frying pan into the fire. Soraya Ali reports.
Olympic marathon events were initially moved from Tokyo to the cooler northern city of Sapporo to avoid the intense summer heat in the Japanese capital. But 2 years on, critics say Tokyo 2020 organizers have effectively leapt from the frying pan into the fire. Hokkaido, the northernmost island where Sapporo is the main city, has the second highest per capita COVID-19 rate in Japan, even higher than Tokyo. Opposition from residents is growing, and officials in the city, like Takashi Okugi, who is in charge of Olympic preparations, say they still don't have key information, including the number of athletes to expect and details on health facilities.
For example, if an athlete gets infected, how can we support them when they need to go to a quarantine facility or a hospital? Or how can we communicate and cooperate with Tokyo 2020? We still need to meticulously discuss these things.
The Tokyo 2020 organizing committee did not immediately comment. Sapporo hosted a half marathon as a test event in May. All participants, including six international athletes, had to log their temperature and answer a health questionnaire daily in the week leading up to the event. Organizers hailed it a success. But this week, more than a dozen civic groups in Hokkaido Prefecture submitted a petition to demand the governor cancel all events scheduled to take place in the city. Masamichi Nishio is a doctor representing the campaign.
There are no hospital beds. The medical system has collapsed. We have other patients beside COVID. For example, when there's a cancer patient that needs an operation, we can't do it. because the intensive care unit is not available.
Reuters' Soraya Ali. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Heibels. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy your day ahead.